Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Rogue of the Borders by Cynthia Breeding, narrated by Lulu Russell. Chapter 1. Abigail Townsend adjusted her spectacles and stifled a yawn as she looked around Lady Jersey's gilded ballroom. Although the French doors stood open to allow the breeze in from the balcony, the room was already stifling with the crush of people, to say nothing of the mixture of too many perfumes. Young debutantes swirled past in pastel dresses, like so many butterflies. Their partners, in formal black frock coats, reminded her of crows. Even their chattering sounded like cackling. Lord, could she survive yet another season? At 23, she was a bit long in the tooth for such foolishness. But being the Earl of Sherrington's daughter assured that she wasn't quite ready to be put on the spinster shelf just yet. Putting up with the tediousness of never-ending routs, soirees, dinners and balls, with polite, stuffy conversations about nothing, grew worse each year her father made her attend them. She would rather travel and see all the faraway places she had read about in her beloved books. But women didn't travel alone. She hadn't even been to neighbouring Scotland. Scotland. And one Scot in particular. Just where was Shane MacLeod anyway? Abigail frowned slightly, peering through the crowd. Surely he would attend the ball. Lady Jersey was hosting it to honour the wedding of his cousin Jamie MacLeod to Mari Barclay on their return from Rassay. Mari had assured her Shane would attend. Abigail didn't have time to finish the thought, as the butler announced the arrival of the Earl of Cantford, Ian MacLeod, and his wife Gillian. And right behind them, as if Abigail had conjured the man, stood Shane MacLeod. Her breath hitched, and she smoothed her blue satin gown, which was silly, since she was half a room away. Would he even notice her? He seemed taller than she remembered, but maybe that was because he wore a snowy white linen shirt with a MacLeod tartan sash across his broad chest, instead of a frock coat. Wind-blown black hair brushed his collar, giving him a roguish look. Even though he didn't have a massive claymore strapped to his back, like Jamie favoured, Abigail could picture Shane as a Highland warrior amidst a swarm of lace-cuffed dandies. Even from this distance, she could see his eyes were grey as a stormy sea, and so was his expression. She smiled. Another person who apparently didn't want to be here. The trio had barely gotten to the punch bowl before a bevy of giggling girls descended on them, fans fluttering faster than their eyelashes. Thank goodness Shane stood head and shoulders above them, or Abigail would have lost sight of him completely.
I told you he would come, Mari said from behind her. Go over and say hello.
Abigail turned. I cannot just walk up to him. Not that Violetta Billingsby or Amelia Tansworth, the two ninny hammers who headed the bevy of girls, would allow her to get close anyway. Mari rolled her eyes.
Then go say hello to my sister. Gillian will handle the conversation from there.
He seems quite occupied at the moment. Who is occupied? Jamie asked, as he joined them and put his arm around Mari's shoulders. Following their gaze, he grinned.
Are you ladies ogling Shane?
Abigail felt her face heat.
Of course not. Of course she is, Mari said. Shane is a good-looking man.
Careful, lass, Jamie warned. I may get jealous.
Mari gave him a playful poke.
All the MacLeod men are handsome. I remember in particular how Violetta and Amelia kept chasing after you.
As if I were interested.
Jamie turned to Abigail.
I can assure you, Shane is even less so. When he is near commanding a ship, he'd rather have his nose in a book.
Abigail recalled that about him too. She'd been at Mari's the day he arrived with news of Gillian's accident, and they'd discussed Chaucer in the library while he waited for Jamie to return. Shane didn't seem to mind that she was a blue stocking either. Would he remember?
Oh, come on. Mary gave Abigail a small push. We will all go over.
I'll just tell the lassies Shane has spoken for, and no to bother, Jamie said as they started across the room.
Abigail stopped and gave him a horrified look. You will do no such thing.
Why nae? Jamie shrugged. It would make it easier on everyone.
Abigail turned to Mary. Promise me he will not do that. He is teasing, Mary said, and then gave Jamie a questioning glance. You are you not? Jamie seemed to consider, and then he grinned.
Aye, lass. Shane can handle himself.
As they began to move again, the butler hurried over to the group by the punch bowl and handed a folded note to Shane. Abigail watched his face darken as he read it, and then said something abruptly to Ian, nodded a curt bow to the ladies, and left.
What happened? Jamie asked as they joined Ian and Gillian. Something about a shipment of tin being loaded and the paperwork not in order, Ian replied as the disappointed girls drifted away. He wants to leave when the tide turns tomorrow, so it couldn't wait.
Shane was leaving. Abigail felt her stomach sink. She had wanted to talk to him at least. He was the only man who had ever intrigued or even interested her. She had to see him, had to find out if the fervency of emotion she had felt when she'd met him was real. Hardly a day had passed since their brief meeting when she hadn't thought of him, and fantasized about him as well. He really was a fine specimen of the male gender, much better than the pictures of Greek and Roman statues she found in art books. Will he be returning to London? Ian gave Abigail a studied look, and Mary laid a hand on Jamie's arm before he could say anything.
Aye. He doesn't like to run an empty ship. He will bring back silks and champagne from Calais for London shopkeepers.
How long will he be gone? Mary asked. Ian shifted his dark-eyed gaze to Mary, and then to Jamie.
'Tis a fair amount of interest the lasses have in our cousin.
Aye?
Jamie stopped as Mary gave him a warning look. He grasped her elbow before she could nudge him into silence and gave her a dimpled grin.
It seems they do.
Abigail hoped her face didn't look as flushed as it felt, but perhaps it did, because Gillian intervened. I think the round trip usually takes about a week, does it not?
Usually, Ian answered, moving his gaze from Mary back to Abigail. Like Annie wants to be in Edinburgh, getting the kelp ready by month's end.
Abigail scarcely paid attention to the rest of the conversation, as an idea began to form. A totally brazen idea. An adventurous idea. France was one of the places she wanted to see. Shane would be gone only a few days. Why not go with him?
She certainly wouldn't have any flirtatious competition on board his ship.
Of course, she could not simply walk up the gangplank the next morning with her portmanteau and reticule in hand. She could already hear the excuses Shane would give. Women did not travel alone. Women did not belong on ships. Women should not take risks. There would be a whole litany of reasons not to take her along. But what if he didn't find out until they docked in Calais? Being tall and thin had its advantages. Abigail could disguise herself as a boy. She had done it before when she had wanted to watch the sailboat races on the Thames, and her mother, rest her soul, had forbidden it. Shane couldn't very well just leave her on the docks in France. He wouldn't leave her on the docks. She just knew it. Papa would probably be furious, at least at first, but he knew how Abigail longed to see faraway places. She'd leave him a note. For the few days she'd be gone, he could say she was visiting relatives in the country. No one would be the wiser. Abigail smiled, quite pleased with herself. Finally, she was going to be off on an adventure. A real adventure that would include Shane MacLeod. Standing at the rail of the Borderlass the next morning, Abigail inhaled the salty scent in the air
as the schooner made its way past the Isle of Dogs and toward the channel. The scenery blurred since she was not wearing her spectacles, but they were finally moving. She'd heaved a sigh of relief once the last line had been cast off, afraid her father would find her note too soon and come after her. She was still a little amazed at how easy everything had been so far. Arriving as dawn broke, she'd joined several boys on the dock looking for work. No one had even questioned her gender, with her hair pinned tightly under her cap, and she loved the freedom of movement the breeches gave her. Mentioning she could cook had gotten her a spot in the ship's galley. There had been one harrowing moment when Shane had come on board and looked in her direction, but then she'd realized he was only scanning the decks. She would probably be wise to stay below deck for the crossing, though. The ship lurched as the wind filled the sails, and Abigail grabbed the rail. The deck suddenly seemed much more slippery with the boat heeled over at an angle. Still, it was an exhilarating feeling to see the open sea ahead. She'd always wondered what it would feel like to be sailing, and now she knew. What a glorious, wonderful adventure this was going to be. William Townsend scowled as he crushed the note his daughter had left him and tossed it on the flames in his library's hearth. He'd known his daughter was strong-willed, but he'd never thought she was foolish. In fact, he'd secretly taken pride that she was so intelligent and actually encouraged her love of reading. She'd talked of travelling to faraway places, and he'd encouraged that too. Far better she'd be interested in the broader scope of the world than the limited confines of the snobbish society they lived in. But he'd not expected her to venture out on her own. He'd taken pride that Abigail was nothing like her mother Delia, although he should be ashamed to think ill of the dead. Delia's death had been suspicious, since it had been her lover, Wesley Alton, who'd found her. William had known for a long time his wife cuckolded him with various men, but this latest one had mental problems, and several months ago had escaped from Bedlam. William never thought his daughter would go chasing after a man, especially one who had not declared for her. His frown deepened. The MacLeod men seemed to attract a gaggle of women wherever they went. Jamie had been a bit of a womanizer before he settled down with Marissa Barclay. Was his cousin the same? Had Shane MacLeod filled Abigail's head with promises he didn't intend to keep? William set his mouth in a grim, tight line. No one was going to take advantage of his daughter. No one. He would be waiting when Captain MacLeod returned. And the man had better be damned cooperative. Unlike many sailors, Shane MacLeod was not a superstitious type. He respected the sea. He knew she gave no quarter to men who were not vigilant, both in keeping their ships trim and an eye on the barometer. His crew understood fighting and drinking on board would not be tolerated, which helped ensure safety as well. Still, Shane had a strange feeling about this trip, as if something were amiss. The passage to Calais would take scarcely 2 days. The winds were good, the weather clear. He'd even made a second round this morning inspecting the rigging, but found nothing wrong. His men, save for the rather gangly boy hanging onto the rail, had gone about their jobs hauling sails and securing sheets with the efficiency of long practice. Shane frowned as he approached the helmsman.
"What's her heading?"
"Due east, right on course, Captain," the man replied.
"Do you want me to fall off?"
"Nay, keep her steady," Shane said. "I want to be well in the channel before we turn south." As he headed toward the bow, he noticed his men were at their stations, and the skinny youth had disappeared. Shane hadn't seen the boy before, but his quartermaster, Donald McFay, often hired one or two to help the cook or clean the cabins before a sail. This one, though, had pale skin as though he'd not been exposed to the elements, and had gripped the rail like a landlubber. It would be a short trip, but Shane hoped the youth was not prone to seasickness. Shane spread his feet, bracing himself within the narrow confines of the bowsprit, and breathed in the fresh scent of the sea.
It was his favourite place to be at the start of a voyage, riding each wave as the swells lifted the bow, plunged it downward into the trough, and then up again. Jamie compared the motion to the rocking chair canter of a good horse, but no horse could gallop across the vast expanse of rolling water. Unless, maybe, one of the mythical Scottish kelpies. Shane took in another deep breath and reflected on the last month. No one had been more surprised than he when Jamie announced he was getting married. His footloose, fancy-free cousin was thoroughly besotted with his English wife, and one who liked London parties at that. At least last night, Shane had been saved from having to endure one of those packed, hot ballrooms with too many people. The group of girls who'd surrounded him had all been pretty enough, but he didn't think they'd made a complete, sensible sentence among them. He'd spotted Abigail Townsend across the room. The blue of her gown had set off the rich chestnut of her hair. The chandeliers had reflected light off her spectacles, so he didn't know if she'd seen him or not, and he hadn't had time to seek her out. Not that he had any business or intention of encouraging any woman. For a man who spent most of his life at sea didn't have time for a wife or family. But Abigail Townsend had been interesting. She actually liked history and literature, expounding that day in the library on Chaucer's A Knight's Tale as though she'd walked the dusty trail along with the pilgrims on their 56-mile trek from Southwark to Canterbury. Shane wondered what she'd say if he told her he was a knight too, one of the ancient Templars' priory, now operating under the guise of the Grand Lodge. But of course, he couldn't tell her. Their existence and their mission had to remain secret, as it had been since the Templars fled to Scotland centuries ago. His musings were cut short when the bosun called down to him from the crow's nest on the foremast and pointed with his scope.
Black-hulled ship ahead, heading south, Captain.
Shane's senses went on high alert. Was this what the niggling in his brain had been about?
Adjust course, he called to the helmsman. 10 degrees northerly.
Aye, Captain.
Although the Channel no longer posed a threat from France since Napoleon's defeat, there were mercenaries who flew under no flag. Black-hulled ships served well for stealthy, undetected movement at night. Better to change course and avoid a confrontation, if possible. The uneasy feeling returned as Shane adjusted his own telescope for a better look, and then slowly lowered it. The boat was a corsair, its narrow hull fast and highly manoeuvrable. The oarsmen doubled as fighters. Shane didn't need to see a Jolly Roger flying to know the boat belonged to Barbary Coast pirates. The question now was, had they been spotted? When the horn sounded, the cook whipped off his apron and handed the soup ladle to Abigail.
Keep an eye on the stew, he said, as he grabbed a pistol from a lower shelf. And don't be letting it spill.
What is wrong? Where are you going? She asked, eyeing the gimbaled cast-iron pot dubiously. Truth was, she knew little of cooking, other than preparing tiny sandwiches for afternoon tea, and occasionally making a pudding. This contraption from which the heavy kettle swung was completely foreign to her.
Captain sounded a pirate warning. It means all hands on deck.
Should I not be going as well, then? The burly man paused with one foot on the ladder's rung.
Captain doesn't like green boys on deck if there's going to be a fight. Keep an eye on the stew. 'Tis the crew's dinner.
He pointed to a pair of large tongs hanging off a hook.
Use those to keep the pot steady. You'll be finding yourself swimming home if you spill it.
Abigail stared at the empty ladder after he'd gone. Pirates? Fight? England was not at war. Of course, she had read in the London Times of ships being attacked on the high seas, and even in the Mediterranean. But in the English Channel? In broad daylight? She heard the crew running on deck, their feet sounding like thunder from her position down below. Something pinged off the deck, and she heard the sharp crack of a gun fired, followed by a distant rumble of return shots. The acrid smell of gunpowder filled the air as the men on deck released a volley of musket fire.
None of the shots had the heavy vibration of cannon. But what was going on up there? The enemy's guns sounded closer. Were they being boarded? Would Shane be hurt? Staying below was irritating, to say the least. Surely just a peek out the hatch would not hurt. Abigail glanced at the stew, bubbling in its gently swaying cradle. It certainly wasn't going to boil over. She grabbed hold of the ladder and began to ascend. Just then, the boat heeled over sharply and sent her sprawling as it changed direction and picked up speed. Abigail sat, nursing the arm that she had landed on, and then gasped in dismay. Stew had sloshed over the kettle and now covered the floor. Abigail slipped on the broth and tiny pieces of meat, causing her to land on her bottom with a thump. "You'll be finding yourself swimming for home if you spill it." Those had been the cook's last words. She had not only ruined the soup, she had destroyed it. There would be nothing hot for the men to eat. The crew wouldn't really have her thrown overboard, would they? Shane walked the deck, checking his men for injuries. Luckily, only one had been grazed, and the pirate ship was now moving swiftly away. He suspected the Corsair had already made a haul elsewhere and decided to make a try for the schooner, not really expecting his crew to be fully armed. A few rounds of fire had convinced the pirates tackling the schooner would be a wasted endeavor. He muttered an oath as he looked at the foresail. Several musket balls had ripped the canvas, and it flapped even as the crew hauled it down. The two jibsails seemed not to have been damaged, but loss of the foresail would slow them down. "We will post a double watch," he told the bosun. "One in the basket and one on the bow. 4 hours on, 4 hours off." The last thing he needed was for the Corsair to circle back and see any damage had been done. "Aye, Captain." Shane walked to the helmsman.
"How far off course did we go?"
"We're about a knot farther north than usual," the helmsman replied. "Do you want me to turn her back?" Shane shook his head.
"Adjust course to 90 degrees. We will sail east a wee while before turning south. It will cost us half a day's sail, but I do not want to be following too closely behind the Corsair."
He rubbed his neck where a muscle was beginning to tighten. The feeling something was amiss had not gone away. He didn't have long to wonder what the next mishap would be. His cook appeared back on deck, holding the gangly youth firmly by one arm. From the dark look on the man's face and the gravy splattered over the boy's shirt, Shane knew a hot meal would probably not be served.
"What happened?"
The cook gave the boy a shove and he stumbled forward, eyes down.
"I gave him a simple order to watch the stew and use the tongs to steady the kettle. But the lad didn't listen. The fool wanted to see what was happening on deck."
Shane could sympathize with that. It probably had sounded like all hell was breaking loose from below decks. Still, that did not matter. Orders were orders.
"Look at me," he said.
Slowly, the lad lifted his face.
"I will nae tolerate a man on my ship who will nae obey orders. The sea do not allow us second chances. Had you been on deck and disobeyed my man, you could have cost someone a life. Do you have any idea of what a danger you could be?"
The youth recoiled, his brown eyes suspiciously bright. Shane decided to tone down the tongue lashing the boy deserved, since the last thing he needed was for the youth to start crying. His crew would be relentless in taunting the boy, and right now Shane did not want to dress any man down. He needed the crew alert, watching for pirates, not nursing bruised egos.
"It is imperative that orders be followed on board ship," Shane said once more. "Lives depend on it. Do you understand?"
The youth nodded.
"I'm sorry."
Shane blinked at the soft tone. How young was the boy? His voice hadn't even changed yet. On closer look, he appeared not to have ever shaved either. His skin looked soft as a woman's. What had the quartermaster been thinking to take him on? As if reading his thoughts, the cook said,
The lad said he can cook, so maybe he can work a miracle with dinner.
What is wrong with dinner?
A nearby sheet handler asked, while another who had been tending a line looked up as well. The boy's eyes widened, and Shane had another misgiving.
Is the stew completely ruined then?
Aye, everything spilled when we came about, the cook answered grimly. Which would ne'er have happened if the fool had used the tongs like I told him. The two men beside them cursed, giving the lad black looks. Near dinner, one of them said, loudly enough to attract the attention of the other men on deck.
I say the lad goes for a swim.
The boy started to tremble.
Please, I can make something to eat. I swear I...
No one is going overboard,
Shane said in a voice that brooked no argument. Salt biscuits and jerky will have to do for today. He ignored the grumbles he heard. Those were rations they ate when the seas were rough.
Get back to your tasks.
The muttering stopped as the men returned to their stations, but the murderous glances they gave the lad warned Shane the incident was not over. The boy would probably be a pulpy mess of bumps and bruises the next morning. Shane sighed.
Get below and help Kirk get the victuals fixed. Then report to my cabin.
Your cabin?
The youth asked, starting to shake once more. Again, Shane wondered what such a timid lad had been doing on the docks this morning. Obviously, the boy had not been living on the streets. Probably had never even had his nose bloodied. The uneasy feeling returned. Was the lad a runaway from some well-to-do home? The last thing Shane needed was to be accused of abducting the boy when they got back. The least he could do was return him to London with no physical damage. There was only one way to keep the boy safe.
My cabin, Shane said. You'll be sleeping there tonight.
Chapter 2. Abigail looked around Shane's cabin with the curiosity of a cat who had lost none of her nine lives. Yet. The hostile glances of the crew all afternoon and muttered remarks made the small quarters seem like a safe haven. And it was Shane's. The cabin was one of two nestled beneath what was called the poop deck, on which the helmsman stood. She didn't really want to linger too long on the connotation for why a stern deck was called that. Thankfully, there was a chamber pot in this cabin. Perhaps it was best the incident with the stew had occurred. Abigail hadn't really given any thought to how she would tend to her personal needs amongst a crew of men. Walls of well-polished teak gleamed in the light from a gimbaled oil lamp, swaying gently with the rocking motion of the hull. Below the lamp, a small table was nailed to the side wall, with a stool beside it. A chest of drawers took up another corner, topped with an inlaid metal basin, washcloths and shaving items secured in a leather satchel swinging from a hook. A bunk attached to one wall had a wooden rim that Abigail supposed was to keep the occupant from falling out. She eyed the bed with its tartan spread and sat down on the edge gingerly. It certainly was narrow. Hardly big enough for Shane. And it was the only bed. The door opened, and Abigail started as Shane's large frame filled the doorway. The cabin suddenly seemed much smaller. She attempted to stand, none too gracefully, since the wooden fiddled rim cut behind her knees, and managed to plop onto the stool. Shane frowned slightly, and then turned his back as he rummaged through a drawer. Tossing a clean shirt on the bed, he began to unbutton the one he was wearing.
What are you doing?
One black eyebrow rose.
I'm going to wash the salt off my body.
He stripped his shirt, and Abigail stopped breathing. Never, never, ever had she seen so magnificent a specimen of man, and she'd pored through every art book she could find to look at such. Shane was powerfully built. But the way his wide shoulders sloped to the bulk of his muscled arms, and his broad chest rippled down to well-defined hard ridges of his belly, was pure, chiseled sculpture.
Are you all right, lad? You look a bit peaked.
He frowned, You're not going to be sick, are you?
Abigail suddenly remembered to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?